Did you think your plans were secret when you left your office last night and you closed the door behind you? Were you walking in your sleep or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes upon you?
White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is White Aryan Resistance, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker on October the 8th, 2014. It's a beautiful day. Clear skies, a few puffy clouds around, sun shining big time after the big moon show last night or early this morning. Yeah, and drying off now. How about that? At P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show. and any other donations you'd like to send along, plus your snail mail and things like that, and we'll read your letters. Well, I got an email this morning from one of our people suggesting or questioning what happened to Pam. Now, I'm not going to give Pam's last name because those who know her will know who I'm talking about, and some of the people that may get in here may be, you know, the boys, and we don't want them to know anything. Anyhow, Pam got out of prison about a year ago and is doing great and staying out. We've seen each other a half dozen times, and she's got a good head on her shoulders and staying away from the old crowd. As for any guys getting out, I keep hearing Scutari and now Dewey in 2015. I always never believe this until I get hard information. I have not been in touch with both of them for a year, so it's as not to be on their radar if parole and so on comes up. I just want them to get out. Kemp had a boy born last week. He's a perfect example of someone coming out, getting a job, saving money, and so on. It is all in personality, and I believe going back or staying out of jail. Yeah, that's right. Randy Evans went back in a few years ago on narcotics. We suspected something when we saw him. I don't think he'll make it another few years on the outside. Seems like prison was okay for him. And that was from Terrible John Metzger. How about that? See, you don't hear much from John Metzger, but he's working in the background. Yeah. Now, we don't talk about everything that our family has done for these people because it's we'd like to do it, but there's people out there who want to hear things that we don't want them to hear. All I can tell you is John and his wife have gone way out of their way to help some of the people and visited several of the POWs. Not only once, but multiple times. Now, whenever anybody asks about John Metzger, let me tell you, he pulls his load. That's all you need to know for now. Let me give you a little example of how brainwashed white people are. I have told you before, I get together with my senior class once in a while. There's about 25 or 30 living around this area. And we had one lady come in from Arizona to visit that was in our class, and we got together last night and had a nice time. But quite interesting, somewhere in the conversation it came up about these guys going and joining the ISS, and most of the people were saying, oh, they got to pull their passports and they got to declare them non-citizens and so forth like that. And I spoke up and I said, yeah, I think we should do that to anybody that goes and joins another army in another country, like the Jews that go to Israel and fight and kill for the IDF. And the one guy, he got so excited and flustered, he almost jumped out of his chair, pissed off, and, oh, that's different, that's different. I said, well, what's different about it? Either you have a rule or you don't. If you have a rule, if people join other armies and fight for other people, then they should lose their passports and so forth. Oh, no. Well, he calmed down after that, but this guy, it was like somebody pressed a button on his back, almost jumping out of his chair to defend Israel. That's how bad it is, I'm telling you. I'm going to tell you another thing, like I keep telling you, when the crap hits the fan, whenever, you're going to have a lot to worry about with these Christian Zionists. Watch them very carefully, because they're fanatical, and they will physically attack you. Fortunately, last night it didn't come to that, but in other cases it could have. Well, a growing body of evidence points to a concerted campaign to prepare Americans and the world for war against Iran. This is not idle speculation. It fits a pattern that repeatedly preceded previous hostilities. Here are the recent examples on Iran. The claim that Iran is a WMD threat. Pretty much everyone is familiar with the long-term continuing efforts to paint Iran as some kind of a nuclear threat. This ignores the possibility that Iran is telling the truth and contending it is embarked solely on non-military nuclear research. And serious doubts among many experts that Iran is preparing nuclear weapons. Perhaps most important, it discounts the fact that many countries, including Iran's archenemy Israel, have nuclear weapons, and disregards the undoubted truth that if a country like Iran ever did launch nuclear weapons, it would be wiped out in a nanosecond, creating a very strong disincentive for offensive war. At the same time, by encouraging other countries and internal foes to believe that it has nuclear weapons, Iran creates an inexpensive protective shield for its regime. A dangerous game, to be sure, but without further evidence of Iran's nukes, hardly a reason to launch a war that would surely cause even more death and destruction than the misguided Iraq invasion. The claim that Iran tried to hire Mexican drug cartel hit squads to kill a Saudi ambassador on U.S. soil fizzled. Remember this one? So ludicrous that even the ultra-cautious corporate news organizations laughed it out of the spotlight. Still, it may have been a test of what will fly, and likely did impact a percentage of the population, particularly those getting their information from jingoist outlets like Fox TV. The claim that Iran is complicit in the 9/11 attacks, a federal judge reviewing the evidence presented in a lawsuit on behalf of the 9/11 victims concluded this month that it proved Iran provided direct support to Al-Qaeda, especially for the attacks on September 11, 2001, unquote. This one may gain traction due to the powerful lingering emotions on the topic. For complaints about the general operating style of the judge who ruled in the case, click here. Because this ruling and the underlying lawsuit are based largely on claims of defectors, and past experience shows that defectors frequently trade political valuable assertions for personal benefits. Remember that girl came out of Kuwait and was claiming that the Iraqi army was taking babies out of their cribs in a hospital and bashing their brains out? Yeah. More research is needed on these things. Remember, discredited CIA Iraq source curveball, the cited NSA intercepts also bring to mind the intercepts put forward as a proof that Saddam had WMDs. It's further worth noting that the defendant, Iran, was not present to challenge the assertions. In addition, examination of many of the plaintiff's assertions shows that they may misrepresent circumstantial evidence. Example, several of the 9/11 hijackers transited Iran on their way to and from Afghanistan, taking advantage of the Iranian practice of not stamping Saudi passports. This ignores the fact that Iran, which is an enemy of Saudi Arabia, makes a practice of not stamping Saudi passports so that Saudi nationals, especially minority Shiites, do not get in trouble with the Saudi authorities on their return, similar to Cuba's practice of not stamping American passports. This story has yet to break big, but count on the ruling to cite increasingly in the months ahead by those who are pushing war. And here are a few past examples, 1990 to 2011. Add your own comments, the section below. Blame Saddam for incubator baby deaths and plots against Bush's father. Provoke him by slant drilling from Kuwait. Then imply no objection if he takes action. Blame him for 9/11 complicity. Falsely tie him to the Al-Qaeda. Claim he possesses WMDs. And poses an imminent threat, misrepresent claims to make it seem like he did not destroy his WMD stocks as ordered, and hear more and more. blamed Gaddafi for the Lockerbie bombing, mass rapes, mass murder, fund an uprising, then bomb him for humanitarian reasons when he responds in order to assure his survival. You don't have to approve of these regimes to see that these appear to be, and in many cases certainly were, false provocations that reek of ulterior motives. How many of these countries are oil exporters? In fact, you can abhor these regimes and hope that they will not survive and still realize how problematical it is for the American government to repeatedly foist big lies on its own people. This kind of thing is beneath any administration claiming lofty ideals and purporting to serve the public's interest, and something that none of us should feel comfortable being a party to. Public interest is defined as seizing oil wherever it may be found. Then, well, that's a conversation we need to have, and quick. There are severe consequences of this definition, among them the empowerment of those forces, both corporate and governmental, that profit most from the unbridled development of fossil fuels and that have good reasons to block the development of renewable sources of energy. They're known today as the 1%, and they are destroying the world. Notice how a lot of this fighting is becoming very complicated with we got the Kurds and the Turks really fighting each other. But now the Turks have allowed 200,000 Kurds to come into their country. But the Kurds want the Turks to go over into Syria and fight Assad. And the Turks are refusing to do it, even as this ISIS is about to conquer this city that's right on the border of Turkey. It gets very complicated. Now we've got Russian nationalists who don't like Putin, going across the border and fighting in the Ukraine on the Kiev side. I mean, it's not a whole lot of them, I don't think, but still, it gets very complicated. Russia on Tuesday accused an ultra-nationalist activist of crossing into the Ukraine to fight on Kiev's side in the first ever criminal probe into an alleged mercenary for hire. The investigative committee said Roman Zeletsnov joined the Azov paramilitary battalion in eastern Ukraine in July and was trained to help the Ukrainian army forces fight the pro-Russian separatists. Zelenov was provided with personal firearms, ammunition, and special equipment, investigators said in a statement. On the orders of commanders of the Azov battalion, he arrived in the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic, where he is actively fighting as a mercenary together with other fighters from Azov Battalion. The Russian investigators said he received a monthly payment of no less than 4,000 Ukrainian hryvnias. That's their money, $300 to 240 euros a month. They also said that Zeznov, known among activists for his ultra-nationalist credentials, had been previously convicted of theft and hooliganism. Searches have been conducted at his Moscow home, they said. Under Russian law, taking part in an armed conflict or military action as a mercenary carries a maximum punishment of 7 years in prison. Pro-Kremlin separatists claim scores of Russians are fighting on their side in the eastern Ukraine. But more recently, reports have also surfaced of Russian nationals fighting against them and alongside the Ukrainians, though their numbers remain unclear. Zeleznov is believed to be an ally of ultra-nationalist Maxim Martinkevich, who founded a neo-Nazi group. Many ultra-nationalists in Russia oppose the government of President Vladimir Putin. Kiev and the West have accused Kremlin of sending regular troops to Ukraine to prop up the rebels. Moscow has denied the claim. Analysts have warned the Kremlin is playing with fire by supporting a separatist movement in the Ukraine and whipping up nationalist sentiment at home, and that the strategy could backfire. So you see, things are getting more and more confused no matter where you're talking about. I mean, they're over on the border of India and Pakistan, now they're shooting at each other. And that's rising up. Now, most of this has a religious basis, you know, other than the guys that are out there just trying to get the oil. They're using religion on all sides to instigate a lot of trouble. And so now I see a lot of Americans, a lot of English, a lot of Europeans, white guys, siding with this Kiev system against the breakaway Russian-supported group in the east in Ukraine. Now you've got Russian nationalists also being called neo-Nazi, coming out of Russia, and they're opposed to Putin. And they're going to fight on the side of the Kiev bunch. It's too confusing, man. It's just, and it changes by the day. Well, there's a lot of whacked out movies coming up in the fall, but there's one here that took my notice, Life of Crime. That's produced by Daniel Schechter, good Irish name. A relaxed and meandering dispatch from Elmore Leonard's chilly, laid-back Detroit underworld, Life of Crime looks at the early days of Ordell Robbie and Louis Gara, two thugs whose names might be familiar to moviegoers who remember all the trouble their older counterparts caused in Jackie Brown, which was released 17 years ago. Schechter's adaptation of Leonard's The Switch is not a career pinnacle like the Tarantino take on Rum Punch, but it is an easygoing piece of work that's content on to hang back and watch slippery people as they figure out the kind of messes they've gotten themselves into. It should go without saying that Ordell and Lewis' half-baked caper goes south quickly. Leonard's world is light on criminal masterminds and heavy on people who don't think very far ahead. That's particularly true of Mark Boone Jr.'s peeping Tom neo-Nazi, who gets his comeuppance when he tries to spy on a Bottle Brown hostage played by none other than Jennifer Aniston. That sounds like a weird one. Somebody out there graded it B+. Well, we'll have to see about that. You know, they're so loose with this term neo-Nazi that can mean almost anything, almost anybody, if you're not all the way over into Marxist-Leninism. You're probably a neo-Nazi. Well, let's go through a list here of some of the new stars in Hollywood, the young ones, and see who's mixed race. Bright blue-eyed Alexis Bledel is half Mexican and half Argentinian. Okay, let's see. Whoops. Apple mogul Steve Jobs' biological father was a Syrian. Nora Jones is half Indian. Neo's, and I have no idea who this black guy is, his maternal grandfather was Chinese, making him one quarter Chinese. David Gallagher was born to a Cuban mom and an Irish dad. A lot of these people I've never heard of. I might have seen them in a film or something, but I sure as hell don't remember. Sarah Paxton, blonde hair, blue-eyed, is half Mexican. Keanu Reeves, that's one I know, is a quarter Chinese and a quarter Hawaiian. Wentworth Miller, who I have seen on TV, he's half black and half white. Sort of a little lighter than Obama. Yeah, he's not as niggerfied as Obama. Kid Cudi, who appears black to me. I never heard of King Cudi. He had he's got a Mexican in his family. His father was a Mexican, okay? Sharon Leal is half Filipino. Never heard of her. I hope somebody out there recognizes some of these people, because I sure as hell don't. Keanu Reeves is the only one so far. Olivia Munn, that's M-U-N-N, is half Chinese. and you can't tell it by looking at her picture. Chad Michael Murray is a quarter Chinese. You can't see it in him either. Boy, here's one that's got a little bit of everything. Vanessa Hudgens, native Indian, Mongol type, Irish, Spanish, Filipino, and Chinese. What a biological mess. Shannon Elizabeth, she's half Arab. Bob Marley was half black and half white. Well, he looked more black than white, but that's the story there. Wheel of Fortune beauty, Vanna White, was born to a Puerto Rican father. Well, they don't say, you know, a lot of these people, there's whites in Puerto Rico, and there's whites in all these countries, so it's not that easy to define. Well, here's a good comment on this subject. As with many other discussions about race that I've read, this list is based on assumptions that people have about race, ethnicity, and nationalities. I saw a few people on this list that were called mixed because a parent was Puerto Rican, Cuban, or Mexican. These mixes are based assumptions that the parent automatically had to be of mixed descent. Typically, when Americans hear that a person is Mexican, Cuban, or Puerto Rican, a certain image, stereotypical image, comes to mind without knowing the full range of what a person from that nation could possibly look like. For example, if someone from Nigeria told someone that his Nigerian friend was mixed with American, what type of image would come to that person's mind? An American could look like anything. This is my point. Although Americans tend to think of one image of a Mexican, there are descendants of Africans in Mexico as well as people who look as white as any white German. We can't assume what Kid Cudi's father looked like simply because we know he was a Mexican. If his father was a black Mexican, would we still be calling him mixed? This is also true of Vanna White. Who knows if her Puerto Rican father didn't look white? But because of the Puerto Rican label, we automatically assume that her father had to be of mixed race. Same with a Cuban. A Cuban could be of primarily Spanish descent, primarily African descent, or something of a mixture. Without knowing the origins of people of various nationalities, the discussion on race and mixture sounds ridiculous. Well, I agree. That's why you should not go by national titles. When you say Mexican, well, what do you mean? What, a mestizo, a Negro, a white Aryan, or what? It's, in every country, that's where you have to figure things out. You can't go by titles. Now we got all kinds of niggers in Sweden. Come on. Well, the Ugandan president, Yoweri Museveni, on Wednesday called on people to stop shaking hands as the country works to contain the Ebola-like Marburg virus, which has killed one person. Quote, "If I don't shake your hand, please don't think I'm impolite. We must stop shaking hands," he told. Museveni told a national breakfast prayer meeting in the capital of Kampala. So the Christians in Africa are not shaking hands no more. Quote, "To control Ebola and Marburg," he opened, "you say you can't shake hands," unquote. Well, there you go. There goes the neighborhood. We thought everybody's going to be buddy-buddy. If you can't shake hands, you can't shake anything else either, man. Well, the ruling class are not going to be they're not going to be very happy with this. The economic impact of the Ebola epidemic could reach $32.6 billion by the end of next year if the disease ravaging Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone spreads to neighboring countries in West Africa, and the World Bank Group said Wednesday. The World Bank's assessment said the economic impact of Ebola is already serious in the three countries and could be catastrophic if it becomes a more regional health crisis. The CDC said last month that unless efforts to curb the outbreak are ramped up significantly and quickly, the disease could infect up to 1.4 million people by mid-January in the two nations, Sierra Leone and Liberia alone, with Ebola's potential to inflict massive economic costs on Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, and the rest of their neighbors in West Africa. The international community must find ways to get past logistical roadblocks and bring in more doctors and trained medical staff, more hospital beds, more health and development support to help stop Ebola in its tracks, said Jim Yong Kim, president of the World Bank. Well, probably what's going to happen, they're going to bring in a lot more doctors and a lot more nurses and a lot more people, and they're going to start contracting it and taking it back home. Guess what? And then the next step is for this stuff to go airborne. Well, if you're infected and you cough and your spittle goes out for several feet, that is airborne. So if you're one of these clowns are on an airplane and coughs or sneezes, watch out, man. Well, Papa's on the move, the Pope. Divisions among Christians hurt the church and they wound Christ, Pope Francis said to tens of thousands of visitors gathering in St. Peter's Square Wednesday morning. During her journey through history, quote, the church is tempted by the devil who tries to divide it, the Pope said, and unfortunately she has been marred by serious and painful decisions. Boy, you can say that again all down through history. It's been 100 years war, 30 years war, all these wars, Christians fighting Christians. Francis devoted his general audience to the issue of unity of Christians, urging his listeners to take an active part in healing the wounds that still separate them. We must not forget, he said, that there are many brothers and sisters who share our faith in Christ, but who belong to other denominations or traditions different from our own, unquote. He challenged his hearers not to accept these painful decisions, divisions, which in the course of history have often been a cause of conflict and suffering and even wars.
Your kids are smart. Your dog, well, let's just say he's sweet.
Oh, that's hilarious. These inter-Christian rivals and struggles and fights tore Europe to pieces for hundreds of years. And they still do. They still do. Fighting among themselves. I would say that two-thirds to half of all the problems in the world today have a root in the Abrahamic religion. And then other religions, too, have their situation. Obama got all pissed off at the GOP again as a party of billionaires, which it is. Then he attends a $32,000 a head a plate fundraiser hosted by billionaire property tycoon named Rich Richmond. That's an apropos name. Oh, that's ridiculous. Recently in New York City, two other events sponsored by the Democrat National Committee cost between $1,000 a plate and $32,400 a plate, or just to attend. Well, here we go with the scare machine. Representative Duncan Hunter, I used to call him Drunken Hunter when I lived out there, of California, says that at least 10 fighters for the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria have been apprehended while attempting to enter the southern U.S. border. That's called the Mexican border, Mexican USA. The California Republican claims that at least 10 ISIS fighters have been caught coming across the Mexican border in Texas, unquote. In a conversation with Fox News, on Tuesday, Hunter says that the Islamic terrorists are slipping into the U.S. through the porous southern border, as several have already been captured. Well, do you believe it? I don't believe much that comes from Duncan Hunter or Drunken Hunter or Fox TV. But anyhow, if they're here, let them show their hand. What are they going to do? Well, I'm in real trouble, boys and girls. You've likely heard that multitasking is problematic, but new studies show that it kills your performance and may even damage your brain. Research conducted by Stanford University found that multitasking is less productive than doing a single thing at a time. The researchers also found that people who are regularly bombarded with several streams of electronic information cannot pay attention, recall information, or switch from one job to another, as well as those who complete one task at a time. Oh boy, I'm in trouble. But what if someone had a special gift for multitasking? The Stanford researchers compared groups of people based on their tendency to multitask and their belief that it helps their performance. They found that heavy multitaskers who multitask a lot and feel that it boosts their performance were actually worse at multitasking than those who like to do a single thing at a time. The frequent multitaskers performed worse because they had more trouble organizing their thoughts and filtering out irrelevant information, and they were slower to switch from one task to another. Ouch! Well, I won't go on with that because based on that, I'm screwed. Maybe a little more here. Research also shows that in addition to slowing you down, multitasking lowers your IQ. A study at the University of London found that the participants who multitasked during cognitive tasks experienced IQ scores declines that were similar to what they'd expect if they had smoked marijuana or stayed up all night. IQ drops of about 15 points for multitasking men, lowering their scores to the average range of an 8-year-old child. So the next time you're writing your boss an email during a meeting, remember that your cognitive capacity is being diminished to the point that you might as well be an 8-year-old child. And he could be writing it for you. Well, that's sort of depressing. I'll have to have a drink after this. My question is, how do you get anything done if you don't multitask? I got so many things to do. If I didn't multitask, I don't think I'd get half of them done. Well, that was in Forbes magazine, and you know how the Forbes are. Check on a story from the Rogue Progressive for a little bit here. It'll make your hair stand on end, man.
The herbicide Roundup, and the fact that its inventor, a guy named John Franz, who was apparently brilliant, that's what Dr. Ritterman calls him. But this one product has changed the face of agriculture. The herbicide has become the foundation for an entirely new approach to farming. It's biotech farming, biotech farming. And it has expanded around the globe. Now, Monsanto makes seeds, Monsanto makes seeds. Son of a bitch. They do. They make seeds for soy, corn, canola, cotton, alfalfa, and sugar beets. Seeds that are genetically engineered to be tolerant of Roundup. Give me more Roundup. Don't hurt me. Seeds that are genetically engineered to handle Roundup are now marketed in 120 different countries. And as Dr. Ritterman points out, throughout the world, Roundup is sprayed heavily as a weed killer without fear of damaging the cash crops, which have been engineered to survive this herbicide's effects. Wow. So the change in how agriculture is produced has brought a change in the profile of diseases. We've gone from a pretty healthy population to one with a high rate of cancer, birth defects, and illnesses seldom seen before. Now, that quote comes from a doctor who works in the area of Latin America that's known as the Soy Republic. This is an area, 125 million acres in Argentina, Brazil, Bolivia, Uruguay, and Paraguay. All of that area is now devoted to genetically modified soy production, and the people who live and work there have gone, as as Dr. Who's this guy? Let me see here. Dr. Medaro Avila Vazquez, a pediatrician specializing in environmental health. He says the change in how agriculture is produced has brought a change in the profile of diseases. And he's referring to that area that's now referred to as the Soy Republic. We've gone from a pretty healthy population to one with a high rate of cancer, birth defects, and illnesses seldom seen before. Roundup blocks, here's some chemistry for you, the ESPS synthase enzyme, which prevents the synthesis of amino acids that plants need for growth. Now, since animals don't have this enzyme, it was initially hypothesized that they would be safe from Roundup's effects. We don't have that. Unfortunately, Roundup has now been shown to affect much more than the EPSP synthase enzyme. The herbicide has been proven to cause birth defects in vertebrates, including humans, and it may be the cause of a fatal kidney disease epidemic. And an increasing number of studies, epidemiological studies, are now linking this product to cancer. Now, Roundup was first introduced in the Soy Republic, these 125 million acres in Argentina, Brazil, Bolivia, Uruguay, and Paraguay, in 1996. And doctors serving those areas have documented an alarming increase in cancers. A group of dedicated physicians formed an organization called Doctors of Fumigated Towns. They held a national conference in August 2010 in Cordoba, the center of Argentina's soy region. And the Department of Medical Sciences of the National University at Cordoba sponsored the conference. An estimated 160 doctors from throughout the country attended. Here were the concerns, as explained by Dr. Vazquez. Quote, the change in how agriculture is produced has brought a change in the profile of diseases. We've gone from a pretty healthy population to one with a high rate of cancer, birth defects, and illnesses seldom seen before. What we have complained about for years was confirmed, and especially what doctors say about the sprayed towns and areas affected by industrial agriculture. Cancer cases are multiplying as never before in areas that use massive amounts of these pesticides. Vazquez, of course, blamed the biotech agriculture. Now, we're talking about Monsanto. We can say the biotech corporations, but let's be real here. You know, Roundup is Monsanto's deformed, hideous monster, half-human baby. Vazquez said this, quote, the tobacco companies denied the link between smoking and cancer and took decades to recognize the truth. Well, not recognize the truth, but admit the truth, I think would be better, but never mind. The biotech and agrochemical corporations are the same as the tobacco industry. They lie and favor business over the health of the population. Now, it was the health of the population that concerned Dr. Damien, boy, here's a name for you. There's Anasi, a professor of social and environmental health from the National University at Rosario, also in Argentina. In 2010, he began a house-to-house epidemiological study of 65,000 people in the city of Santa Fe, not New Mexico. That's in Argentina's soy region. He found cancer rates 2 to 4 times higher than the national average, with increases in breast, prostate, and lung cancer. And he said of his findings, quote, cancer has skyrocketed in the last 15 years, end quote. Now think about the cancer rates in this country. You know, we can have all the pink-themed marches we want. We can all wear the ribbons and put the pink lights up here and the pink lights over there. And that's good. But it doesn't go to what is one of the central reasons that the cancer rate, breast cancer, prostate cancer, lung cancer, is increasing at such a rate. Nobody, as a matter of fact, I would not be surprised to discover that there are biotech companies that sponsor these breast cancer marches and fundraisers. You think? I don't know, but I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to find that out. Research has also been done in the U.S., Canada, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, investigating possible links between glyphosate. That's the active ingredient in Roundup that is the monster here. The relationship, possible links between glyphosate and cancer. A large number of studies have focused on glyphosate's possible association with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. But there's so much more than just that, and it's starting to surface now in these studies. Scientists from the International Agency for Research on Cancer, IARC, have analyzed studies spanning almost three decades. The IARC is the branch of the World Health Organization, the WHO, that promotes cancer research. And scientists throughout the world with skills in epidemiology, laboratory science, and biostatistics are brought together to identify the causes of cancer so that preventive measures can be instituted. Preventive measures. The agency views cancers as linked directly or indirectly to environmental factors. Now, more on this when we come back. There is no longer any question about cigarettes and smoking and various cancers. There's no longer any unsettled science where it concerns global climate change. There's no longer any doubt as to the murderously toxic effects of glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup and is being used all over the world. While Monsanto executives and shareholders make a fortune while they continue to genetically modify plants in order to accept this filthy, stinking, toxic product. And you and I, we don't matter. Haven't for a long time. So don't eat this stuff. We discovered at our friendly local supermarket, they will now label, if you ask, whether or not a product is GMO'd. Some of them. And if you have any doubts, don't eat it. Don't buy it. Because if you do, you're contributing to your possibly early demise, which means fewer of these programs you get to listen to, which would be a tragedy. But back to this lengthy article by Dr. Jeff Ritterman that was in Truthout. Another method that scientists have used to assess Roundup's cancer risk is to expose cells grown in tissue culture, expose those cells to the herbicide. And what happens? Well, first of all, sheets of cells are grown on a small dish with nutrients. Glyphosate is added and the effects are observed. In 2010, researchers in India exposed mouse skin cells grown in tissue culture to Roundup. When the herbicide was added, the cells became cancerous. Thailand, they did the same thing. Australia. New Zealand. In a study from the Institute of Biology, University of Caen, I know I'm mispronouncing it, in France, researchers studied glyphosate's effects on rats. This report that on the rats was published in 2012, and it was retracted after the biotech agriculture industry complained. Oh, God damn you! We don't want truth! We got product to sell! Get this sciencey crap out of here! And they did. However, after extensive review failed to show any fraud or problem with the data, which is what the biotech industry claimed, the report was republished in 2014, this year. Now, in that study, Roundup was shown to double the incidence of mammary gland tumors. Double. These cancers develop much faster in rats exposed to Roundup than in control rats. There was also an increase in cancers of the pituitary gland. In any substance that interferes with cell division, it doesn't make any difference where the cell happens to be. It doesn't matter. if there is interference, if there is a breakage in the DNA chain, if either or both of those occur, then the result is, by definition, cancer. And glyphosate does both. And Roundup is glyphosate. And Monsanto makes Roundup, while at the same time genetically engineering plants to tolerate it. What about the goddamn humans? What about them? I'm sorry. I got all profane there for a moment, didn't I? Darn. Epidemiologist studies, epidemiological studies in humans in the soy regions of Argentina, in Europe, United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand have shown Roundup to be linked to the cancer increases. Now, does the evidence, I said a moment ago, there's no causality being proved yet. Does the evidence linking Roundup to cancer in all these studies, does it prove causality? Well, it depends on what you mean by causality, right? Back in 1964, in the landmark Surgeon General's report, which for the first time linked tobacco and cancer, the Surgeon General at the time, Dr. Luther Terry, presented criteria for the establishment of a cause and effect relationship in a scientific study. Okay, if these criteria are met, then you have a cause and effect relationship. Okay, what are the criteria? To meet Dr. Terry's criteria, an association between, say, Roundup, glyphosate, and cancer, that association must be strong, specific, and consistent. Cause must precede effect. You can't start with the effect and work backwards. Got to be cause, then the effect. And the association between the substance and the cancer has to be biologically plausible. The breaking of DNA, the interference in cell division, that makes the studies scientifically plausible. Am I right, Kathy? Thank you. Now, how well does the association between Roundup and these, just those three criteria, fit? Roundup exposure is consistently and specifically associated with precancerous abnormalities in a wide variety of experimental settings. Epidemiological observations show a tight linkage between glyphosate and cancer. In the laboratory research, as well as in the epidemiological studies in the field, exposure to the herbicide precedes the development of these abnormalities. Uh-oh! And there are plausible biological mechanisms that explain how glyphosate can transform cells into cancers, breaking DNA, interfering with cell division. Why? I think the criteria have been met. By golly! Well, then there's no question. Monsanto, Roundup, glyphosate, cancer, death! I'm sure tomorrow that the powers that be will read the study and they will rush out and remove all the Roundup from the shelves. And they'll stop spraying it on fields and farms. Right? 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 Maybe not. In citing Dr. Luther Terry's report, researchers in a highly regarded statistics textbook entitled Chance Encounters provide an example of a strong association. If an illness is four times as likely among people exposed to a possible cause as it is to those who are not exposed, the association is considered, surprise, surprise, strong. Here's your control group. They're not exposed to something, but they're going to get cancer anyway. Here's your experimental group. They're exposed to glyphosate. Now, I'm not talking humans here. They develop cancer at four times the rate of the control group. Why? I believe there's an association. So say the scientists. So, to conclude this, Roundup has now been conclusively proven to cause birth defects and to be closely linked to cancer. And the obvious conclusion, if we don't want this in our food, in our water, land, then we need to stop using it. Ooh! That is so complex. If we don't want it in our food, our land, and our water, why? 2 plus 6 minus times pi, the square root axiom. We need to stop using it. Of course, the final irony of all this, when the cancer cells that have been triggered by glyphosate reach their peak growth, they kill the host, and the cancer cells die too. Why, that seems weird too, doesn't it? So the science is clear, but the economic interests are going to prevail. They have so far. The executives of the biotech agricultural corporations and their backers have ignored or denied the science documenting Roundup's harm. Biotech agriculture's most powerful backer, however, is the government of the United States of America. Did you know that? I've saved the last for the end, as did the author of this piece, Dr. Jeff Ritterman. Biotech agriculture's most powerful backer is the government of the United States. I'll explain that when we come back. The biotech industry's most powerful backer is the government of the United States. This official policy, as Dr. Ritterman explains, was explained itself in a 2010 U.S. State Department cable from former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Here's what it said, quote, "Our biotech outreach objectives for 2010 are to increase access to and markets for biotech as a means to help address the underlying causes of the food crisis and to promote agricultural technology's role in mitigating climate change and increasing biofuel production," end quote. Wow. So the U.S. government has been willing and does exercise its muscle in support of the biotech agricultural corporations. In El Salvador, for example, the United States recently pressured the government to buy Monsanto's genetically crapped up seeds or risk losing $227 million in development aid. We in the United States. El Salvador refused, preferring to buy the seeds from its own struggling farmers. Well, that's a reason for war. There is a disturbing parallel between the exponential growth of biotech agriculture and the spread of cancer in the human body. Cancers are cells that reproduce rapidly and haphazardly with no regard for the greater good of the organism. Cancer cells consume valuable energy, starving out normal cells. They grow so wildly and so quickly that they crowd out their neighbors. They send off emissaries to start new cancer colonies. They make harmful substances that damage healthy cells. They spread relentlessly. In the final sad irony, they kill their host, and they themselves die in the process. Like a cancer, biotech agriculture has crowded out its neighbors and is spreading relentlessly. Also like a cancer, it makes harmful substances. Roundup is one of them. And as more acreage comes under genetically modified cultivation, we can expect Roundup use to only increase. Monsanto came up with the genius idea. Develop this horrifically toxic poison, and then develop through genetic engineering seeds of food products that are resistant to Roundup. God damn! Roundup kills plants, causes birth defects in vertebrates, and is linked to cancer. Can a living planet withstand the continuous assault from this poison any more than the human body can withstand the attack from an aggressive cancer? You can have overnight to think of the answer to that one. This should be required reading, of course, for everybody. It should have a profound effect. This report, which came out yesterday, this article at Truth Out by Jeff Ritterman, medical doctor, this should be in the hands of every single member of... Oh, what am I saying? Be in the hands of every single member of Congress. I almost said that. Oh, Jesus Christ. But now you know. A couple of emails from people from Michael and Roswell. And if someone thinks that not eating soy relieves them of the glyphosate burden, it won't. So glyphosate is being used on non-GMO wheat shortly before harvesting. Apparently it helps mature seeds separate from the wheat stalk. So it's increasingly found in many wheat products too. But hey, what's human misery compared to profit? As a matter of fact, regarding what Michael wrote, from Nation of Change, there's a piece there. Monsanto scandal causes reopening of U.S. investigation of GMO wheat. Have it right here. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow. There, Monsanto scandal causes reopening of U.S. investigation of GMO wheat. Have it right here. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow. Memphis writes, thanks for the Roundup discussion. I've been gathering information on Roundup and Monsanto's Roundup Ready GMO crops for years. Something the corporation is very silent about is that if a crop is resistant, so-called, to Roundup, it absorbs Roundup. Uh-oh. Therefore, whoever eats the plant eats the Roundup. Not pretty. I repeatedly asked my congressmen why Monsanto CEO and board of directors haven't been charged with assault on health, crimes against humanity, treason, and terrorism. After all, we bomb a country that deliberately, knowingly poisoned our food supply like Monsanto does. No congressmen ever replies. Not that I expect them to. I just contact them for my own integrity. Cat Mary in Memphis. And Lee in New York City writes, Mike, this is an easy way to think of DNA copying and damage. Think of DNA as connected logo pieces. Each logo piece represents a protein. You can break apart a logo construction. Imagine you have a big bucket of Lego pieces and to make two sets of the original Lego. You may do this perfectly. If Roundup is present, you may behave inebriated and make mistakes. Each DNA construction goes into its own cell. If the DNA has a mistake, every copy from now on repeats the mistake. Lee in New York City. Yeah, I know. There are other things to talk about, but I just thought that...
Well, as you can see, there's a lot more to salvaging the race than just talking about Negroes and Jews. It's all a part of the big picture. I mean, if they don't have to kill us off if we eat poisoned food and feed poisoned food to our kids. You're making the job easier for the people in charge, the ruling class. This is Terrible Tommy, and it's, let's see, what was today? Wednesday, Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Thursday. 14:05, and remember to keep your pie hole shut. And be a good lone wolf. And if you're on the job, keep your pie hole shut. If you're a friendly cop, keep your pie hole shut. If you're in the military, keep your pie hole shut. We got a lot of work to do. And we got to stick in to be be into it before we do something to sabotage our own efforts, right? Okay. Bye-bye.
Sunny weather,
happy trails.